So, again, we're happy to be here. This is more or less a family talk because it's Krishna House. So, what we intend to share this evening with all of you is what's the topic? I remember. Sustainable relationships and spirituality for positive change. So, relationships is something that we cannot deny. And the whole world is existence itself is rooted in relations. Why? Because even in the spiritual world, there's a relationship. We do have relationship with the Supreme Spirit, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is why, even in this material world, we cannot do without relationships. Is there anybody who can say, well, I can do without relationships? I don't think anybody. I don't need to ask. I think nobody. Why? First, who we are all given birth to by parents. A mother and a father invoked us into this world. So we have a relationship with our parents. Child-parent relationship. And we do also have relationship with friends. Like you go to school and you make friends. I was in Ohio, in Columbus. And one little boy, just 7 years old, he made a friend at school, and his friend came over to their house. He's a devotee. The friend is not a devotee, so he brought a friend from the school, and the guy stayed over the weekend with him at his home. So I was making a joke with the mom that, you know, your boy is, you know, more a preacher than you. Because the boy went out and he was able to make a devotee. You may say that, oh, he's just a friend, not a devotee. But when he came over the weekend, what merit did he get? The mother of this devoted boy was feeding this non-devoted boy with prasad. I mean, it's like, you know, a collaborative effort. So the boy, he went out, he made some friends, he brought him home, and then the mother did the other job by, you know, giving the child more prasad. So we do have friends, and sometimes the friends that we make at school, even in high school, or even in primary school, there are people that become part of our life for a whole lifetime. And therefore, we should never judge friends. I know in my own, I can give an example of my own specific case. In fact, even my master's degree, it was friends who actually sponsored me. The point is, we shouldn't joke with relationships. And so, besides a parent-child relationship and friendship, we also have other types of relationship. Can you tell us some more besides parent-child relationship, besides friendship? Husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah. Brother and sister.
Huh? Brother and sister. So all of these things are there. And, you know, funny enough, I had an experience, you know, last semester we did a course in advanced statistics on quantitative reasoning analysis. And even before the course went halfway, some of the PhD students had already dropped the course. because everybody was crying of statistics. I was discussing with the professor that, you know what? I love this course more than all the course-based works that actually have been taken. And so he said, why? Because everyone else was crying. I said, because I could relate the whole of this course to my teachings. What I'm practicing as a priest, I can relate this whole course to it. Can you imagine statistics? Tell me, can you relate statistics to Krishna consciousness? But that is what I realized, that the whole of statistics is just about relationships. Because if you talk about even the G-square, correlation, regression, all these are just about relationships of variables. So, I realize that statistics is very, very close to Krishna consciousness philosophy. So, the point is, whether we like it or not, we are in a relationship. Sometimes, I see these inscriptions on people's web pages or on Facebook or something like that, relationship status. And some people don't really think about it. But, sometimes I challenge people that, this language you're using is wrong. Because if someone, take for instance, someone says, I am in a relationship, does it make any sense? It doesn't make any sense logically, literally also. Because when you say, I have a relationship, it means that some people are not in a relationship. That is what it implies. If you say, I am in a relationship, it means there are some people who are not in a relationship. You show me one person who is not in a relationship. So, the point remains that we are all in a relationship. It's just a matter of, different type of relationships. And the relationships we have in this material world with other embodied souls are temporary. I remember the case when Chitraketu's son died. And, they were traumatized by the event. And, some priest even was asked to invoke the child's soul back to the body. That was done just to be able to satisfy the king. But what was the boy's reaction? What was his response? He said, so you have been lamenting in a traumatic situation because of me? You say, I am your son? And so you think you are my father? But which of the fathers? Which lifetime? I've been in this world for several millions of lifetimes. So which of them? You think it's just you? So the boy gave, the father, a high-tech philosophy, Vajna Vedanta, that he became sober. So, the point is that all of us are having established relationships in this world. However, the relationships are temporary. The idea of spiritual culture is to be able to consolidate our relationships, to spiritualize our relationships, so that we don't risk missing out in our interactions. And there are ways, there are techniques to be able to get this consolidated relationship. There are ways to get it very much consolidated, cement it perfectly well. And, you don't have any risk of losing someone you love. And one way to do that is to seek out when someone is actually distressed. I can give you an example. I remember in Africa, I was deputy president in Lagos for some time, and someone had an accident Bhoti had an accident in another city, like, you know, 5 hours drive from where I was staying. And when I heard about it, I never had met with his family, his wife and children. When I heard about it, I went there. I sacrificed everything that I was doing and I went there. So he was already hospitalized, and then I went to the clinic to see him. His wife and two kids were there with him. It was the first day I met the wife and those kids. And, you know, the distance is far, 5 hours. Basically, what happened, what ensued, was that I was able to have some interaction with him, sympathize with him. I sat there with him for a while. I think about 45 minutes or an hour, and then I left. You know what that very visit had created? His wife became so much involved in our relationship. So the point that each time the wife hears him around, and the husband doesn't make efforts to get to the house, there'll be a quarrel at home. But the wife felt, this guy, there is nobody, none of your friends loves him like him. None of your friends actually love you like this guy. Look, the distance he came from, 5 hours drive. And it was the first time I went to that city just to be able to see him. Even the children, till today. The guy told me one time I was traveling. That time I was a brahmachari, I was traveling, going to different universities for preaching, so I didn't have any time to stop over anywhere. So the wife got to hear that I passed through that city, and because I didn't have the time to go to their home, the wife went and made a hell of trouble with the husband. The husband is an ophthalmologist. He's an eye doctor. And so later the man called me up and said, see, there's trouble at home. And he said, but you are the cause of the trouble. I said, how did I become a cause of trouble at home, at your home? So he explained to me that, you know, the wife had heard that I passed through, and because I didn't stop over, she just went to attack him, that the man must have done something to me. He must have done something to this guy. Otherwise, why wouldn't he come here? So I told him, please explain to your wife, I'm busy with academic programs, and that is why I didn't come. There's no trouble between myself and you. Still, she was not convinced until I had to call her on the phone to explain to her why I couldn't actually come here. So if you look at a situation, if you find someone who is close to you, if it's in a problem, that is the time to strike the match. And you have an impression on that person's mind, a whole lifetime impression. What people want to see generally, when they are in distress, they want to figure out who cares for them, who loves them. Like, if someone is ill in a clinic, that is the best time to create an indelible impression on his mind that you care for him, that you love him. Because people don't joke with those visits. Now, there is a theory, basically, that has been generated in clinical studies. And that is a theory of attentively embracing a story. Traditionally, we don't want people to bug us with their problems. If you have a problem and you come start telling me about your problem, I feel you're just disturbing me, you know? This doesn't concern me. Why are you bugging my head? This is your own problem. But what has happened in medical care is that when people are distressed, say someone is ill or someone is having some problem, social problem, economic problem, whatever problem, when you actually give your time to that person, you give quality time to that person, you listen to him without caring about the inconveniences that accrue, the person will actually open his or her heart to you. Because at that time, people are desperate. They want some relief from their problem. And the only way to get relief is to be able to... The primary way to get the relief is to share what is disturbing you with a confidant. So Rupa Goswami had mentioned also that all of us, we should have heart surgeons. At least one heart surgeon. That's what Rupa Goswami said. He said we should have confidence, someone we could open our hearts to at the time of need. Why? Why did Rupa Goswami say that? Because there is a psychological construct that underpins that principle. If someone has some difficulty, some problem, some traumatic experience, a traumatic situation, just by sharing that with someone else, someone that loves you, someone you trusted, it's not that you're going to open your heart to everyone on the street. If you have some heart problem, you don't go and meet, if even the person is a doctor, it's not every doctor you're going to open your heart to for the surgery. It's only a specialist in the field. So in a similar way, Rupa Goswami recommends that we should actually have companions. He calls them confidants, someone who could actually confide our problems to, and someone that we could listen to. And it works so perfectly. So the idea of Rupa Goswami bringing that to bear is that when we share our troubles, our ill feelings, our perturbations, our traumatic situation with someone, like when you share, take for instance, if you have bread and you share with someone, your bread is reduced, isn't it? Problems are also like that. When you share your problems with someone, you get some psychological relief from the problem. Even before the problem is addressed, before the problem is solved, just by airing out that problem with someone, you get some psychological relief. And if someone is in the trouble, you are free. Except you care for that person, you won't be patient to sit down and listen to that person. Because nobody wants to bog himself or herself with people's problems. And also some people also understand that, you know, if you download your problems on them, then they share it, and also, I mean, they become part of that problem. It's like someone who is having infectious disease. So people don't want to hear other people's problems, but that is the best time to capture someone's heart and put in your pocket. Like, you know, the major duty of young ladies when they get married is to serve their husband so nicely, to help them so nicely, to love them so nicely, that they capture their heart and put inside their pocket. So that the man can't do anything without you. Oh, where is Jane? I'm not. Where is she? Even if he's at work, he's thinking about you. You become his date. Young girls, listen to this. So in a similar way, if we show someone in distress that we care for that person, it creates a very lasting relationship. Generally, when someone is distressed, we like to abandon the person. That is what happens in general. Someone is distressed, we just abandon the person. But it shouldn't be like that. But how do we acquire these qualities? Just by hearing? No. Except we become spiritualized. It is very difficult to spontaneously acquire this type of, you know, high-tech quality of caring thinking, compassionate listening. You can't be a compassionate listener without becoming purified, because the mind is always agitated. And therefore, even with the theory of attentively embracing a distressed story, people can do it. But it is a proven principle. Like in the medical field, what clinicians have discovered is that, like, there was one experiment in the 90s. There was this senior nurse in the ward, And there were also a group of professors and medical students who attend to the patients in the ward. Now, each time the group of students and the professors come, because students, when they're doing medical studies, at some point in time, they have to do residency, and so they work with the professors. Each time this group of professors will come, and the students, this lady's blood pressure will actually rise so much. 62 years old lady. And so, just after that group of learners and expertise will go, she'll be in trouble all through. But the senior nurse in that ward, who visits her privately, sits down with her. And you know, when, you know, the professor, I don't know whether any of you have experienced, I have had that experience, and I know what I'm talking about. But I know when I had, you know, a ghastly auto accident, I had a bladder rupture, fractured bones all over the place, and I went several major surgeries. So you see all these guys, they come, and some of them don't really care. Unfortunately. They just come and do their job. And, you know, they treat you like a machine in some cases. And especially for the resident, those who are doing the residency, they want to use it as an experiment. But the senior nurse, that was completely out of the way. She will go there, the same attendance to the sick or to the patient. She will go there, sit down with this lady, speak to her very, very caringly, lovingly, as if the lady is her mom. Be there, speak to her so nicely, and the lady opens up her heart. Will start to tell her everything that is, about her. And when the senior nurse left, someone had to go and record her, this lady, 62 years old lady's BP. And they realized, or they discovered that the BP was normal or even below the previous time. And so that is how this research has generated this theory of attentively embracing stories from a distressed patient. And if you simply attend to the patients like a professional would do, they have a different response. If you care for the patient, they have a different response. And that is taking cognizance when you actually try to evaluate their physiological well-being or the physiological setting. And so by this experiment, they were able to come up with this theory. And it's just a simple fact in life that people want to see how we care for them. Philosophy is not enough. We have to demonstrate that, yes, we care for you. Yes, I care for you. And therefore, it is the obligation of anybody who is willing to make a positive change on the planet to be a caring thinker. Of course, nowadays, even there are some institutions where they teach courses on critical, creative, and caring thinking. I happened to have taken that course when I was doing my master's. But then, you know, when we were doing the course, some of the ladies, they took undue advantage. And, you know, they go about telling this, the students, the male graduate students, so you are not caring, man. Be a caring thinker. But not only being a caring thinker, you have to be also a critical and a creative thinker. But all of us, we do need someone who gives us quality time. And if you try this repeatedly with someone who is distressed, I bet you will win over that person's life for life. Because when you help someone when the person is distressed, that person will hardly forget you. It will hardly forget you. Just like when you hurt someone, you may forget. But that the person you hurt may hardly forget you. So, we are talking about sustainable relationships and spirituality for positive change. What is positive change? Positive change is all about generating ideas, brainstorming to generate ideas to be able to create a difference. And that begins with the individual. Because even an individual could generate ideas, implement those ideas, and be able to affect on other people's lives positively. And we see in the life of Prabhupada, he left his comfort zone in Vrindavan, came to New York. And those who are from New York, they know what New York is. And not just New York, some specific zone where the hippies and the bombs rain. Then, what did he do? He showered on them a special merciful glance. A special sidelong glance. You know, when we talk about, you know, Krishna showering his devotee with sidelong glance, it means compassion personified. You know, just for form or sidelong glance. But then, you know, even Krishna does this. Krishna will come to give us a surprise, especially when we are desperate, we are completely helpless, we feel, oh, everything is finished. I'm gone. There's no help anymore. And he comes. He comes to help. He comes to the rescue. Then we feel, oh, what a relief. I can never forget Krishna. But yes, it happens. And therefore, we find that people who are distressed, they come to Krishna consciousness, and they find a relief at the time that they never even expected. When they are completely desperate and, you know, everything is like, then Krishna comes to the rescue. So Krishna, what we are talking about, we're talking about when to strike and get a person's attention for life. It's an art. And Krishna also does that. Krishna does that. It comes at the time that you're frustrated, completely helpless, like, you know, everything is finished. Then he comes, beep. Then you realize, oh, he loves me. Therefore, I must do everything possible to see that I please him. And when we talk about spirituality, so that three major concepts here. Sustainable relationship, spirituality, and positive change. These are the key. These are the key terminologies. So when we say spirituality, what do we mean by spirituality? Again, Rupa Goswami gives a perfect delineation of what spirituality, the symptoms of a spiritual person. What are the symptoms? Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaro pasto vegam. He delineates that a spiritual person, the symptom of a spiritual person is that if he's a man, you can leave your 16-year-old daughter with him in the house and she'll be protected. And if that is not there, he's not said to be a very spiritual person. This is the perfect explication of spirituality as given by Rupa Goswami. Therefore, we can use this as a yardstick to measure when someone is spiritual and when someone is not. Because it's not the question of, you know, someone speaking big philosophy, and, you know, you can't really protect other people. And how can you protect other people when you don't protect yourself? How can you protect people when you don't control yourself? It's not possible. Therefore, the whole skill that we are supposed to acquire in the Vaishnavedanta is rooted in having to develop ourselves spiritually. And developing ourselves spiritually implies that we have to follow a particular lifestyle, because it doesn't come from the blues. If you want to become a sociologist, you have to attend sociological classes. If you want to become an accountant, you have to attend accounting courses. There's no way to go about. I mean, there's no shortcut to it. You want to be in a particular profession, you have to acquire those skills. So, essentially, we have to understand that we can be spiritual. We can have lasting relationships. And we can actually help to effect a positive change on this planet. And if someone's relationship is thwarted, it brings a lot of miseries. I've been dealing with cases of broken hearts, especially in youngsters. I've been dealing with a number of them. And you know, sometimes I had to spend so much in making international calls. Yeah, just to be able to save someone from committing suicide. And some of the girls, that could be the first man they met in their life. They give their whole life to the man. Parents even say, "You stop this relationship." She says, "No way." At some point in time, the same man that they gave the whole of their life to sees another girl, jumps to that girl, abandoned the person who has sacrificed the good relationship with her parents, with her family, and giving her life to this young man. She is abandoned. If you realize the pain, sometimes it causes people to commit suicide. This is called a desolate heart, broken heart. And broken hearts are all over the place because of thwarted, fractured relationships. So materially speaking, fractured relationships could bring about so much pain. Therefore, we have to prevent it. And that is the reason why we are talking about sustainable relationships tonight. Even our relationship with our parents, we should see that there is a sustainable loving relationship, because fractured relationships could cause so much of trauma. And intelligent parents, they know this. I remember when I was going to be when I was going to move into the temple, so I told my mom that, you know, this is what I want to do. And then she said, "Oh no, no, don't give up your job. I'm not stopping you from doing anything, but don't give up your job." But then, you know, I didn't like that. I didn't like her proposal, because this is what I wanted to do with my life. And I was already above 18. So who could check? But then later she realized that, there could be trouble for the rest of our lives. A fractured relationship between both of us. So she was clever. So for a short while she was trying to, you know, persist that, you know, I shouldn't. But then later she realized that, oh, no way, he's already timing. So he came back to me and said, "All right, oh, big boy, just do what you want. Do whatever you want to do." Because if even you have a child and there's a fractured relationship, it brings so much of pain. It brings hypertension. It brings you know, untimely death. So in a similar way, we have a spouse. Of course, we don't advocate boyfriend and girlfriend. Those are the areas where we have broken hearts like anything. Because the relationship starts by breaking the laws of God. Boyfriend and girlfriend means breaking the laws of God. I remember, I saw on the internet, one young girl, under 18, you know, she wrote on her Facebook wall, "Break all the rules. Don't care about what people say. Just love." But actually, it's not just love. Just lust. That should be the word there. So the point is that, you know, people may not say this anywhere to us, but, you know, when we come to the Krishna house, we can share, you know, some of these things, because they bring about so much of trauma. When you start working a mathematical problem, you make a mistake in the beginning, you're going to get the right answer at last. So, ladies and gentlemen, young boys and young girls, the way out of all this broken heart, and the broken heart is not only to girls, because sometimes also in the innocent relationship, sometimes the girl also sees a boy she perceives to be, you know, better off, and then she jumps to that type of man, and then abandons, you know, his boyfriend, and then the boy is the one who suffers the trauma, broken heart. So it's both cases. But the point is, it's rooted in illicit relationship. It begins with breaking the laws of God. And when you break the laws of God, you don't see a policeman, a cop, come to give you a ticket. You don't find that. But the pain, the trauma, could come in a way that is more painful than getting a $500 ticket. And I've seen it. I'm talking out of experience. The number of cases I'm dealing with right now on the planet, in America, in India, in Europe, and in Africa. And therefore, the way out should be to spiritualize our lives. And if you're already in a relationship, we should spiritualize that relationship. We should make God the center. Because if we see the partner as an extension of Krishna, as an extension of God, and treat the person in that way, we will not try to exploit our partners. I've seen cases where a man and a woman, married, legally married, legitimate husband and wives, the man is working 8 hours a day. The woman is also working 8 hours a day. They both go out for work. They have two kids or three kids. They go out for work. They come back home. The man goes to sleep. The woman continues the job at home without any help from the man. Well, we may say, "I am the man." Yes, if you are the man, then be the man. Don't let the woman go to work. If you are not ready to help the woman, don't let her overdo the jobs. Simple fact. Because you do that, you are not helping in a relationship. The woman will see you, she may not say it, but the both of you come back from your 8 hours job and you go to sleep. And then she continues with the domestic works. They may not like it, but they may not tell you. You are not facilitating a sustainable relationship. Sometimes we should ask our spouse, "Darling, are you happy?" If she's not happy, she will tell you, "I'm not happy." Then you find out what is making you not to be happy. Sit down. There should be intentional dialogue, even in the family. It should not be an official relationship. There should be genuine, intentional dialogue geared towards creating a sustainable relationship. Because you find that sometimes even in the marriages, one of the spouses is not happy because of the way the other partner treats him or her. And therefore, it is better for us to make our relationships, to spiritualize our relationship by putting Krishna or God at the center. If we see the other partner as an extension of Krishna, an extension of God, as a spiritual part and parcel of God, we are supposed to treat that person in that way, just like we say we are not his bodies. But in most cases, we don't act like that. I remember I was having a chat with one lady, one girl, and so she was mentioning to me how you know, she's getting old, it's time for her to marry. I said, yes, just, you know, there are so many guys there, just look for one and catch. She said, oh, they preach that they are not his body, but, you know, no one's ready to marry a fat girl, you know. Oh, yeah. So, the point is, if we are practical, we should be pragmatist. It's not a question of just speaking philosophy. We should put ourselves in the other person's shoes. And see, if I do this to this person, if this person does this to me, would I like it? And as a matter of fact, there is so much of research work that has been done on temptations. And people have fallen prey to temptation. Temptations have disrupted relationships like anything. Why? Because people are not spiritual. Why people are not spiritual? They are not able to control their sensory modalities and their minds. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, one of our core objectives is to train people to become sadhakas, practitioners of spiritual culture, so that they are able to help themselves even sociologically. It's not about going back to God and enjoy life there. What about here? We should be peaceful also here, isn't it? Should we suffer here until when we go back to God? No. Life is not just meant for suffering. I don't reason with that philosophy. Life is not just meant for suffering. Actually, life is anandamaya bhyasat. Life is meant for enjoyment. But if we approach this prospect of enjoyment in a wrong way, then we will experience fractured relationships. And fractured relationships brings pain. It doesn't bring joy. I never seen anybody, even people who, you know, agree to divorce, after divorce, they are not happy with themselves. I asked one lady recently, I don't want to mention the state, she divorced with the husband. He had a kid. Her friend instigated that they should. Her friend is a counselor, also instigated the lady that, you know, just leave this man, you'll be happy. So, people sometimes they want others to think for them. So, she allowed someone to think for her. She subscribed to that idea. She made moves to make sure that, you know, the relationship is, you know, abrogated. It was abrogated. I spoke to her. Then, what she said, for marriage. Actually, I'm happier here. I'm happier now than when I was in relationship. That was about 3 months ago. Now I got a story that, you know, she's complaining bitterly that she's very distressed. An intimate friend told me. So don't allow someone to think for you. That's the point, okay? If you do have some conflict with your partner, sit the person down. Air your views. There should be intentional dialogue. Dialogue should be a continuous thing. Work out the modalities. Resolve. Reconcile. Because sometimes we think that, you know, the field should be greener on the other side. But sometimes it's not. It's never greener over there. And so, like, we have the privilege of cultivating spiritual life, we should take it seriously, because this is going to help us fundamentally to revolutionize our relationship with people, our relationship with our spouse, our relationship with our friends. Otherwise, the whole thing about relationship there is about exploitation. Because people, and I know, one of my mentees, she told me, her mother will constantly tell her, speak a philosophy to her. Anybody you're relating with, just think about, what am I going to get from this person? So if a child is taught that, what do you think is going to be the child's mentality when he or she develops as an adult? So people are systematically taught how to exploit the resources of material nature. And we are all suffering because of trying to exploit material resources. They belong to someone. They belong to nature. Whose nature? Krishna's. And so it's a simple thing. It's a simple formula. How to live happily in this world. And how to live happily in our relations. Spiritualize relationship. And back on sadhana. Because if you're back on sadhana, then you will resist the temptation to exploit your partner. Someone you love, you will not try to exploit the person. You will always seek out ways on how to help motivate, inspire that person. And so we should think about this. We should reflect on these points. And see how we are becoming agents of positive change on the planet. The change we want to see in the family, it should begin with me. Not that I tell my partner, you're supposed to act like this, you're supposed to behave like this, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. Why did you do something wrong? Fix it. Don't care who gets the credit. In the family, in the community. This is a community of Vaishnavas. I was just making an examination of the word community. And it comes from two words. Commune and unity. Commune and unity. Commune means to communicate intimately. And unity, we all know what unity is. So two things we are supposed to have: intimate relationships. We're supposed to be confidence with each other. That may not take place in the whole of the community, but that is fundamentally what community implies. Otherwise, it becomes something else. So here we are living in a community, and we should try to see how we are getting close to each other, to be able to see how best we can help the next person. All of us, we have problems.